calling stations KO4PXV.
KO4TXV, this is N4VUT. This is Jamie over here in Tigerville.
This is Lloyd. I'm mobile on Highway 14, and it's Kilo Oscar 4 Papa X-Ray Bravo. Up and moving around in Tigerville this morning.
I need to head into school over in Liberty.
As a teacher or as a college student?
As a college student.
That's fine. It's never too late to get an education.
Here, Dave, it's time to just finish using up my GI Bill.
How long do you stay in service?
20. I was a Navy CB doing shore-based construction.
Yeah, I spent 24 years in Army. I'm retired myself.
Further than I did. I retired out as an E6. They wouldn't let me go any further.
I got out as a Command Sergeant Major, so definitely had to pretty much write in MOS due to the fact that most combat MOSs get rank and stuff faster. And I was definitely smart while I was in the military. I got, some education instead of just strictly, just not necessarily wasting my time, but not using it to the advantage of getting college education and some education while I was in service.
It was a choose your rate, choose your fate situation. So I was in a rate that I decided to get away from doing the utilities men stuff that I was assigned as, and I ended up in State Department and teaching CBR before that, so I kind of fell out of the main spotlight, so that really affected advancement.
Yeah, that's definitely the bad thing about it. Pretty much all the branches have military occupational skills that there's so many people that's at one certain rank and they stay there because the advancement is really not fast, so people end up serving their minimum time there at their rank and then they have to get out.
On a board and you have everything that matches somebody else that they see all the time, they tend to pick that person over you, which that's pretty much what mine fell into. So even though I went into specialty fields that only the top 10% of CBs end up in, I still was overlooked because I wasn't in the spotlight.
Yeah, and I hated that happens. Like I said, one would hope that it's, the most, qualified, not just because of what somebody done, but
it's all good, though, because all the skills that I got going into those special spots, I know walking out the door at 20, I was making more money in the civilian world than a lot of the Master Chiefs that did a full 30 because I just had a way different skill set.
That's definitely good that people are smart enough to see, and hopefully your people that were your higher ranking people or at least anybody saw that and knew that to tell you to get your education while you're in the service.
While I was in, but I started working on my bachelor's, but then when I got out, I went ahead and transferred it over to my kids so that they could go to school, but then she only used part of it, so I have the rest of it just sitting there, and it's either you use it or lose it after a certain amount of time.
Yeah, never want to lose any of the military benefits like that. Funny story, when I came back from a deployment, my first sergeant pulled me off to the side and asked me if I was ready to go before a promotion board, and literally I was in my BDUs. I'd stunk to the high heavens and had not showered, and I had been studying religiously while I was gone, and I said, yeah, I'm ready. And so went from before the promotion board, and the president of the board looked at my first sergeant and mentioned that due to the fact that I still had my M16 with me, he looked at him, he goes, first sergeant said, I got the ammunition and stuff like that, the weapons clear. And then he said, well, he's also in BDUs. And this was a inspection. They wanted to look at your dress uniform, and he, the first sergeant mentioned that he had seen it, and it was 100%. And so the president of the board continued on.
Got somebody watching your back like that, because it, you know, it's the, a lot of times it's the people that are like you that are always out in the field doing everything, and you're the ones that are overlooked, where the guy that's completely polished away and always sitting in the office and in front of their face are the ones that get promoted a lot of the time.
Yeah, my first sergeant's philosophy was that he very seldom looks at a shiny penny to do anything.
Well, I was an E6. I used to have crews that worked for me, and whenever I had one that was a kiss ass, I'd just be like, you know, that's not going to get you promoted with me.
Yep, because my philosophy on the military, when I was in there, had a officer that came in, and he said, well, he had all this book knowledge. And I said, sir, I'll put it to you like this that you can pretty much understand. You can read a book on how to ride a bicycle every single minute of the day, but that don't mean you can ride that bicycle.
That attitude got me kicked off from a debt because I was trying to show them how to properly put something together where they just wouldn't listen to me. And then once they kicked me off the debt, the S3 Charlie went through and was like, why'd you kick him off the debt?
That's unfortunate that some people are threatened by that, and they will get rid of people when they're threatened like that.
Yes, I never asked for the accolades. I just wanted to get the job done quick and to the best ability so that we could move on to the next one.
All that means is that person that was threatened by the potential that they saw in you to take their job, and so don't let it stress and just keep on moving on.
I live my life, and that's why I'm retired now.
Yeah, and I do IT stuff for work, and so it's, I've been doing that over 20 years, so and I enjoy it, and it definitely keeps me busy and enjoy it.
Old school ITs that taught yourself everything because the schools didn't exist yet?
Yes, I am. I started out with a 386 on active duty military and, you know, going, you know, pretty much going from there, taking them apart, reloading them, even had to use the binary code or actual DOS code to get the red, green, and blue in different fonts when for a dot matrix printer.
That tells me that you're old.
No big deal with that. Yep, I am definitely old.
You guys that I've ever worked with were all the ones that came up on their own and were doing it before anybody else was.
Yeah, that is definitely true, because we've had, you know, people that we were interviewing a couple times before for intern stuff, and then we had one of them that came off straight off the line from McDonald's, and they said their qualifications were that they ran a cash register at McDonald's. I'm going and I asked them nice, I said, justify how that equates to doing good and quality work in the IT field.
Cash registers attached to the network.
Yeah, like I said, they didn't say anything like that. So I was like, you know, sorry, I didn't lie to them or anything like that. I said, you know, that they weren't qualified, and if you want to work in IT, you know, get some education or get some hands-on experience somewhere. But, you know, running a cash register is, you know, not a way to start out.
Getting diplomatic security, doing IT, or not IT security, but physical security. So I dealt with a lot of alarm systems, video, and all that. So I dealt with our IT guys all the time. and tried to pick up as much as I could about running switches and doing stuff to try to help them out so that I didn't have to, they didn't have to spend time helping me.
Yeah, this day and time frame, when you got the L3 switches and stuff like that, that's a lot smarter than just a dumb switch. And now you've got routers that you can do a lot of configuration on. And now this day and time frame, they put a firewall in between the switch and your network. So that also takes a good bit of configuration. The biggest thing that will ever mess you up on a router was access control list. But now it's just a lot easier to be able to do things through the firewall where you don't have to set up the access control list that will definitely, as soon as you press enter, if you got something wrong, it will, it could flat out lock you out or lock somebody else out.
Yeah, because I used to work with them and just be like, hey, you just tell me how to program everything. I'll put it in the notebook. So next time when it comes around, I'll have it ready for you. So all you got to do is your switch settings.
Yeah, that's definitely good. The thing that I actually learned to do was, and pretty much no one actually realized you could actually do this, is export the configuration that you could have as a standby, or you could have it for the next configuration and open in a notepad, make your changes, save your changes as something else, and then you can import it into the next, you know, switch or the router.
Heard of that, and I've done a little bit with just the devices that I had where I had the ability to do that. So I got a little bit deep into the weeds in it, probably more than most average people, but I still couldn't tell you exactly what I was doing when I was doing it.
Yeah, that's at least you know what you're doing now. Like I said, that's why I'm a true firm believer in what I'm, you know, what I do now, and I pretty much tell everybody that's a user at where I work at, for documentation, 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 because that way if something happens to you, then somebody behind you knows what's going on instead of having to reinvent the wheel.
And that's where I excelled at. I was really good at making sure I wrote everything down. So when I walked out of the military, we were doing SharePoint, and I completely programmed the SharePoint for our entire unit to use globally. And right before I left, they told me I had to take it offline because of the PII rules, even though I knew about the rules and I made sure that I made the SharePoint so it just had a unique identifier for each person, but no piece of information was doubled up anywhere, so they were all their own tables, import VUT.
Yeah, that's pretty much what the, we do now, because the site that I work at, they do a lot of military device. They make a lot of stuff for the M1s and the helicopters, and they make the airplane parts and stuff like that, so they have the, all the plans are pretty much secure, so there's a secure SharePoint site that pretty much have people have to request and justify why they need access to a folder, and most of the time people just get read-only access.
In mind, but I shut it down for them. Actually, I didn't shut it down. I left everything there. I just emptied all of the databases, and then I left. And a couple years later, when I was working head of security for a credit union, I got a phone call from the unit, somebody thanking me for leaving the infrastructure that was in place for the SharePoint, because they fired it up, filled the databases, and it started working for them instantly.
Yeah, that's definitely good, because a lot of people, in that aspect, they would just sit there and just wipe everything out because they don't want to share that information or have somebody else to get credit for something else they do.
Unfortunately, that's where the military was getting when I left out in, what, 2013. It was starting to get very PC, but I came up in 93, so I was kind of taught old school that it's about the mission, not about the person.
That's definitely the era that I came up. I went in 84, and so it definitely, it was, then it was what what's good for everybody. But as it was getting later on in the years, then that's when it progressed to what's in it for me. Not that I was that way, but then other people that were there, it was, well, I'm gonna do something for me so I can get promoted or higher ranking, and so be it for everybody else.
And why I was happy to leave at 20.
Yeah, last week I went down to Dorn Center, and there was actually a soldier that never made it out of basic training, was there for a review to get 100% PTSD because he was fussed at during basic training, and he said it caused him traumatic stress that they tossed his bunk and his wall lockers and this, that, and the other. I'm going, yeah, you're lucky that you came through the military this day and time frame instead of in the 80s when they could really, they could say, curse at you and pretty much talk about your family and this, that, and the other instead of now. Scale 4P XB. I'm not sure if I went to a dead area and lost you.
There's a hole over here in Traveler's Rest.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was me because, like I said, I no longer heard you come back. I'm going, oh, okay, it's either me or him.
Nah, I was rolling up on the light right by Walmart there, and it just went all staticky on me really quick. So I was just in a perfect little dip, I guess.
Yeah, there's an area on Bonham Road that also, I was going through a static area, and I wasn't hearing you, so I just wasn't sure if it was, where I was going through.
The other branches were experiencing the same thing that I was getting in the Navy because it was just strange. Except for the Air Force, I think they had it good.
Yeah, they don't call them the Chair Force for nothing. And I'm just picking at any branch of service because I do thank them for their service. It's just...
Passion them. I wish I would have joined the Air Force because they definitely took care of their people over there.
Yeah, we have the Army always made a joke about them called the stereo assault or the refrigerator assault team.
We'd get upset with them because we'd be over in places like Souda Bay, Greece for 7 months straight and we'd be getting $108 a month per diem. They would come in for one night and get like $180.
That was always the fun thing when we were in Iraq and we had on the bases that we were there. The pilots would sit there and come in, and when we came in off a mission one day, we'd been on there 3 weeks, and there was a pilot sitting at one of the tables was talking about how tired he was for flying an 8-hour mission, and we pretty much were on the road for 21 days straight, driving sometimes 12 or 14 hours, and sleeping with our head with our Kevlar on in the spokes of the steering wheel.
To rest your head while you're laying on the ground.
Yeah, unfortunately in Iraq you don't lay on the ground over there because there's all kind of critters out there, and we definitely learned that lesson when we were in one of the areas in Iraq. One of the other mass sergeants went to use the restroom and his skin touched the ground, and actually there was some kind of chemical in the sand that actually burned it. At first they thought it was from the temperature of the sand, and no, they found out that it was actually a chemical that caused that. So of course we had to move out and quarantine that area off until they found out what it was to be able to clean it up. So Saddam Hussein had been using that for some kind of chemical testing area, and either it was in the air and it fell down back through the ground, or that's where they just spread it out as as the overflow.
It was interesting because during those times I was supposed to get deployed a couple times, but within a week of going out they pulled, nope, we need you here, you're too valuable, you know too much stuff.
Yeah, then at least you definitely had the opportunity and in that aspect, if that's really true, that, you know, people, you know too much in the military, because if something ever happens to that person, then that information can be changed or just secured a little bit more. And if that person has, you know, pretty good training, then they'll sit there and know to do what they can to not reveal the secrets.
People around me, so they sent them instead of sending me, and that's why they were like, you're staying here because you're teaching or leading projects and just the different things that I got done around the place. So they saw me as being more valuable to teach those going out than to actually go out and take the chance of losing that asset. And to me, I'd say, you know, at the time I was disappointed because I really wanted to go, but now that I'm older and a little bit wiser, I'm actually glad I didn't have to go, because I know the things that my buddies went through that did go over.
Yeah, that's why any kind of mission that when we were going on, I'd always tell my guys, if you're at that point, you think you're going to be overrun and captured, or and you think you're going to be tortured, then do the Barney Five thing and save the last bullet for yourself.
That spot to be in. Like, I'm on that side of not wanting to get captured, but I dealt more of with the guys that had been exposed to IEDs, that have, you know, been forced to do things that most people don't do, that they have to live with those memories, and, you know, I'm thankful that I don't have to.
I was truly one of those, because I got caught in a couple of IEDs. But the first Gulf War, the horrible thing about it, because of the rules of engagement, there was an enemy vehicle on fire, and the soldiers that were part of the other force were on fire, and because they were not shooting back, we could not, you know, shoot at them or even do anything to take them out of their misery, and just had to pretty much let them burn till they stopped screaming.
Stuff that, you know, it's crazy the way that things work, and you know what's in the situation, what's right and what's wrong, but yet you have to listen to some person back in D.C. that tells you, you know, this is the way that you guys are going to fight this war when they haven't even been in one.
Yeah, I definitely had that a couple times in the Iraq War. The congressional panels come, you know, congressional people come down and was looking at and making sure. And I was asked one time, well, how do you, you know, deal with or handle the situation where it's women and children with a bomb or something that's shooting at you and trying to kill you? And that's when I mentioned, the minute they pick up a weapon or an IED or some means of trying to kill me, they're the enemy, regardless of what age they are. Yeah, it feels bad and has to be done, but, you know, would you rather them just walk up and, you know, hug me and kill me?
You pick up that weapon, they become gender neutral.
That, yeah, because the enemy, when that point in time they pick up that, you know, means of killing somebody, their age and gender is out the window.
People just can't comprehend is the fact that, you know, we live in a first world country, but when you're dealing with third world countries, they don't care. Like, they don't care how old they are. They don't care what gender they are. They don't care about any of that, and they really don't care about the Geneva Convention.
Oh, I do the fact that, so we don't stress out people, and that will just change subjects. KO4PXB.
But yeah, on a lighter note, Traveler's Rest isn't as smoky as it was yesterday, so I hope they're containing that fire up there.
Yeah, I'm not too far from Wade Hampton and Greer, and I can see the smoke from area where it's definitely hazy, and yesterday around the 1 o'clock time frame, I could smell it in the air, so as from the news this morning, they said it's zero contained.
wind just shifted direction.
That's what they were talking about yesterday, that the wind had shifted direction, and then probably about the 3 o'clock time frame, the wind actually shifted as it is now. It's going, blowing toward Atlanta, so that's kind of bringing some of the smoke in.
Fire into more remote areas or more towards urban?
From what I think, it's actually blowing it into the more urban areas because they were, a couple of my wife's friends in Pickens area, they were told to evacuate.
It's been bad to that part. At least it makes it easier for them to access to fight it.
Yeah, and that's, you probably do like I do now, still have a bug out bag with stuff packed up that you need to, in case you have to bug out. And I definitely asked my wife to get her and my daughter a bag and with some food and stuff like that in case we had to bug out. And we got, you know, one suitcase that has kind of any memorabilia stuff that we could also grab in case, you know, just as that, instead of just losing everything.
The worst part about fire is I've had a couple people that have told me that they've lived through their houses burning down and stuff, and, you know, the fact that 10 years later they'll be looking for something and just be like, oh, I lost it in the fire.
That's definitely true, because if you really want stuff like that, you know, it's, did you want to keep, put it in a safety deposit box in a bank somewhere, and that way you'll always have it.
I have most of my stuff in a fireproof safe, so that way that's covered and I can always just grab it and go with it.
Yeah, and another thing that I know that you mentioned, you had stuff in a fireproof safe. Just if it's items that you can scan or have a secondary copy, definitely that's what you need to put into a safe deposit box at a bank.
Hands on like one drive or something like that, so that it's someplace where you can get back at it.
Yep, put the originals in the safety deposit, in the actual safe deposit box in the bank, and keep your copies, you know, that way, because I know a lot of places they want the original with a seal on it, if anything has a raised seal.
Yep, right there with you.
Sir, I am now in the parking lot at work and getting ready to go inside the building. So please have a great and safe day. It's KO4PXB. I'll be clear on your final.
Good morning. You have a great day. This is M4BUT73.